Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow-up episode for the Season 10 premiere episode, Catalina. In this episode, we heard the very basics, the beginning of the story of how Maria Catalina Palomino was murdered in her apartment. And of course, we had some foreshadowing of what's to come, and that 15-year-old Jennifer Jeffley was eventually arrested and charged with capital murder for the crime. This week, Mike is on one of his very first big boy vacations, and he's not in the office, and so we have a special guest joining us. I am joined here in the studio, side by side with me, sitting in a chair where he doesn't normally sit, Mr. Zach Weaver.
Yeah, it feels weird over here, but I'm happy to be here.
Yep, and then on the computer, via Zoom, from all the way across the country, her IMDb page is several pages long. She played Becca Barber on TV's You're the Worst. You know her as the voice of Cora, and this week you heard her as the voice of news reporter on our premiere episode, and today she is the voice of Mike, the host of the JV podcast, the one and only, very talented, Miss Janet Barney.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. This is a place where any of my show business credits work against me, because this is a place for a serious conversation about the criminal justice system and its needed reform. So I want everyone to imagine me as a fellow fan. Nothing I've ever done does anything for me here, and that's okay. And I'm just a true crime nerd, and I love the show, and I'm so honored to be a part of this. Thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting to be here. I'm such a huge fan, as you know.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You were up at 4, baking pastries at 5, and open at 6. 100th cappuccino by 8, 200th customer by 9, and there's still 12 hours to go. That's why you need a business broadband that works as hard as you do. Introducing Sky Business. With 4G internet backup and our stay connected guarantee, that's better business. To find out more, visit skybusiness.com. Sky Fiber only, 30-second 4G activation or one-off credit. New customers, Pro Plus packs only. T's and C's apply.
All right, so now this is going to be fun because you, I don't have to do anything. You, from here on out, this is your show. Take it away.
Whoa. Okay. Well, we have a ton of listener questions to get through. I want to quickly say I always find this part, the first follow-up of the first episode of a new season, I always wonder, what are the questions going to be like and how many answers can you even give without giving too much away, because you may know answers, but you may be planning on answering them in future episodes. So this is going to be very interesting for me to be on the inside of things to see how you handle some of this stuff.
Yeah, they're always a little tricky. And even, you know, we selected some of the questions, and I try to select the questions that aren't spoiling what's to come. But it is definitely tricky. I'm hoping to not answer an overwhelming majority of these questions with, I'll tell you later.
Got it. Got it. And I also want to say big ups. We could still say that, right? No.
People have said that since 2005, I think.
Cool. People haven't said it since 2005 is what you mean, and I agree. Because I'm always super impressed by the follow-up questions as well. There are a lot of questions that come up that listeners ask that I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, wait a minute. What's up with that? So this is no exception. Zach, what did you think about the beginning of the show? What do you think about the season to come? Any things pop for you right away?
Oh, I am really interested. I mean, the storytelling you've put forth so far is pretty amazing, and I'm excited to hear what's going on. I do have a couple little questions, I think, that I wasn't sure of. One of which, you know, they talk about Jennifer and her sister, and they talk about them being held back. And they kind of allude to them missing a lot of school, but I'm not 100% sure where that comes in to play.
We're going to get into the details of that as the episodes move along. I think in episode 3, so that'll be next week, we get into some of those details. And what's happening here in the first couple episodes of this season is that there are a lot of, as I'm sure you're starting to catch on to it, even in the premiere episode, there's a lot of layers to the story. And I had to make the decision in episode 1, do I just put all these layers right out there? But they're so complex and so deep that I didn't want to just touch on them. I want to, you know, there's going to be an episode about that really speaks to Jennifer's background and her state of mind when all of this happened. The short version I can tell you now is the family, the Jeffleys, moved from East Texas then to Tennessee Colony, which happens to be where Ed Ates was imprisoned for 20 years, and her mom actually worked for the prison system in Tennessee Colony. So she was there, and then they had a couple family tragedies, one of which was that her brother got cancer and was going through a lot of cancer treatments, and they ended up moving around again to get to a better hospital. And through the moves and through helping, you know, it's a single mom trying to work and can't be there all the time. The girls were trying to help, you know, help take care of the brother along with the moves and everything else. And so it put them behind. And then when they moved to Houston, which was to get closer to a hospital that they needed to be closer to, they were kind of struggling and behind from their other schooling already. And then the curriculums didn't match up at all when they got into Houston. And so Houston made them repeat. The eighth grade and her sister Kim had to repeat the ninth grade because they just weren't where they were supposed to be.
That actually clears up a lot for me. I didn't quite get any of that. Mm-hmm. I just they mentioned it a couple times about them being held back, and I never really could figure out why that was part of the story or how that came about or why we were even talking about it. But that does help a lot, actually clear things up for me.
Yeah, for me, I am very nervous. Now I'm glad to have a little more information, but because there were so many allusions to the heartache and the tragedy that these girls were already experiencing. I am a very empathetic person and I'm very emotional. And I was feeling so sad for them without even knowing why yet. Like, that's how much I was like, oh no, what is it going to be? So I'm nervous about those layers because it sounds like they really just were put through it before any of this even happened.
Yeah. And I can tell you it'll be again next week, we'll hear more of this story. And it was one of the most difficult interviews I ever conducted when I flew down to Texas and I met with the family and recorded an interview with her mom, with Jackie Jeffley, who you'll hear a lot from this week too on Sunday. And just her telling the story and then the sisters telling their versions of the story, you know, from their perspectives, was just so just tragic and heartbreaking. I'm the same as you. I have a lot of empathy for other people. And I spent a lot of that interview in tears myself. Now, I'm curious, so Janet, knowing you were going to be on the follow-up and that you listened to all the shows, I text you Sunday and said, hey, did you get a chance to listen to the premiere? And you said, yes. And that was it. So I'm curious.
That's not true. Oh, well, I said, yes, I always start my Sundays with Truth and Justice, which is true.
Right. But no feedback. So I'm wondering, what did you think about the episode in general?
I thought it was great. I was trying to remember if you put past seasons in as much context as you did, because it was very, like, in the beginning, you know, you spent time talking about sort of what else was going on, what else was going on in crime. You know, you mentioned OJ, you mentioned Bill Clinton and Bob Dole, and so you really set the scene. And I know you've done that before in past seasons in terms of, yeah, putting things into some kind of chronological context, but I couldn't remember it. This one felt very rich, and it felt very like, this is going to be important, or, you know what I mean? Like, that it felt important to sort of make sure that you had mapped out what else was happening in the world. Well, first of all, you said there was so much else going on.
Right.
Who's going to pay attention? I mean, potentially, maybe we could infer who's going to pay attention to, you know, one quote unquote small thing that is the biggest thing in someone else's life when
right.
there's all of these other things that are making noise in the media and distracting.
Yeah. And that was when I really wanted to set the scene. I don't know why I haven't done this in seasons past. And as I was trying to, you know, for me writing an episode, I'm always trying to, you know, the cold open is always the hardest part for me to write. I can write the other three acts and everything else just fine, but I always have a hard time, like, how do I come into it? And for me, when I was going through the newspaper articles from that day, which you read one of them, the one about this crime, I was reading it, and it just, something struck me as someone who was, you know, we're close to the same age. So we were, you know, in high school or just getting out of high school at that time. And as I was reading, I was like, oh my God, I remember that. I remember the whole Richard Jewell thing, and I remember the election. And so there was just something about it to me. I thought, I don't know how particularly relevant it's going to be, but I feel like I want to set the scene for anybody that, you know, is at least 40 years old or so, that they can kind of put their minds back there. Like, oh, I remember that. And to kind of put yourself into that timing, because there are a lot of things that we're going to hear. You know, the fact that, you know, not everybody has cell phones, hardly anybody has cell phones, that people have pagers, that there's no GPSs in cars. And a lot of these, it was just to try to put everybody's minds into that space. And it was just something a little different. I'll tell you, Shane didn't like it. Shane, when I sent
it
off to Shane for scoring. Yeah. Well, he didn't say he didn't like it, but Shane definitely said, are you sure this is what you want to do? Because I was listening to it to score it.
Never a good sign. Is that what you're going to wear? That's basically what he was saying. Is that what you're going to wear to that party that's important to you?
Yeah, Shane definitely said, you sure that's what you want to do? Because I was just, as I started listening, I'm 3 minutes in and I'm wondering what the hell is going on. Are we talking about Richard Jewell? Are we talking about OJ? But I decided to go with it. So I was going to say, I'm glad you liked it, but you didn't actually
liked it. I did like it. And I will say, furthermore, you say it's important for those of us who can remember that stuff, but it's just as important for people who are younger, who don't necessarily have that context, to kind of be thinking about that. I think that's equally as important. And I would say, for me, it was actually, this on a personal note, and you don't have to leave this in, but for me, it was kind of a good reminder to hear about the conversations that were happening at large in the presidential election, because a lot of times people oversimplify and go, well, the Democrats are easy on crime and the Republicans are tough on crime and, you know, policies roll out. And if you have this kind of person in office, that means everybody, all the people are going to, you know, crime's going to increase because no one's going to feel like they're getting punished, all that kind of stuff. And hearing the mention of Clinton and really talking about cracking down and, you know, wanting people to feel safe in their homes and all that kind of stuff, that does have a huge impact on the kind of punishment that's issued and the kind, you know, that all that stuff sort of rolls down, I think, to many of the states. And so if we're finding out about a person who may be falsely accused, who may be in prison for, you know, an undue amount of time, I think it's important to know, hey, you know what, just because this side was in office doesn't necessarily mean that, like, hey, it's a free for all and people are just, you know, committing crimes because they feel like, you know, all that stuff, I think, is really important in the conversation about crime.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught on to that, too, because I specifically picked that ad for Clinton for that reason, because some of that stuff does play in later, because I didn't remember that, because that's the same as you know, each party is kind of known for one thing or another. But, you know, kind of forgot that, you know, Clinton was in his first term in that situation where, you know, he was dealing with the Republican Congress, and to try to win the hearts and minds of the American people, he really shifted very, very moderate. And that was his big tough on crime stance that really, you know, drove him through to re-election. And all of this. So that was the temperature of the country at that time was tough on crime, especially drugs. You know, he had appointed that drug czar and all that. And so a lot of that comes into play as we move along.
I feel very smug. I feel like the kid who just raised their hand, like, hey, pick me. And then I guessed the right thing, which was that it is important. Thanks, everybody. Should we get into some of these listener questions? I don't want to ignore these great people who have these great questions that I wouldn't have thought to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. Ashley asked, how long had Catalina lived in that apartment? Could the target have been the previous tenant?
Well, she had lived there for about 6 months, from what her nephew said. Whether she could be, whether there was a previous tenant that might have been a target, that's so hard to say. I don't, what you heard there is, we're going to definitely get much deeper into this. We're going to profile the scene. We're going to learn more about the crime scene. But you heard kind of a preliminary profile in my own reconstruction. That's based on the crime scene photos that I have. I'm still waiting on the full set. I have what was used at trial. I'm waiting on the full set from Houston PD. I do have a crime scene video, and there's just a lot more information to piece it together. So the story I told this week is just my preliminary look at it. But it was really important to me, because the first thing that jumped out at me when this case was pitched to me was, this doesn't add up. It doesn't. The story you're going to be hearing over the next couple weeks doesn't add up to me. And so for me as an investigator, my first step, because that was also something I did a little different this time, is we heard about victimology before we heard about the crime. And I've never done that before, but I just really thought it was important for us to understand a little bit about what's going on and who might have committed a crime like this before we even hear what the crime is and start getting into the suspects, before anybody's mind gets jaded, because that was my step. Once I knew, I know this is the crime, this is the suspect, this is who was arrested, and it didn't make sense to me, of course, my first step was to go through victimology. And the conclusion that I really came to is I don't think she was a target, other than I think it's very likely someone was, and if you go on our website, you can see the crime scene photos and what I'm talking about. But I think it's very likely that someone was walking down that alley, she's standing there, and they see someone standing there with an open patio door, and they just decide, hey, let's take her money, and bam, they jump in. And I think there may have been no planning whatsoever.
Yeah, I noticed the tall enough to keep you honest fence comment that I thought was that actually made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and that's what I went and stood next to it when I was there, and it's weird because it's a privacy fence, right? So it's solid pickets, you can't see through it, but it's only 4 foot tall, which is, I guess, tall enough that you can't easily hop over, but you certainly still can jump over it, and it doesn't. And you're just standing there, you can still see right over the top of it.
Well, I think talking about victimology, I think this is a great question, though, whether she was the target or not, mm-hmm. because of that. Because it looks like, during victimology, she has no reason for anybody to want to get her.
Right.
She doesn't have any money. She doesn't have any enemies, so to speak. So I could see why the listener could ask if it could be potentially the person that lived there before her.
Right. And, that look at the victimology, as we, I can tell you this. The prosecution's theory of the case does not fit whatsoever with my interpretation of the victimology. That's as far as I'll go with that for now. But and that's why it's part of the preliminary process as I'm selecting a case and doing our preliminary look at it in that early stage of investigation. Is does this how does what I think could have happened here compare with what the prosecution says? And that was like this immediate glaring red flag is like this absolutely does not connect. What I see in the crime scene and their theory of the case does not connect whatsoever.
So what you're saying is we're back in Houston and it doesn't make sense.
I just did you hear me pause when I was yes. intentionally trying not to say that doesn't make sense.
I feel that phrase has been ruined for me as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm the bad guy if I ever say it doesn't make sense. Right. It doesn't make sense.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. livewithchampion.com.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and dias featuring up to 32 grams of protein.
This is a great question, great example of a listener who notices something that I wouldn't have caught. Lauren says, you mentioned in the episode that her wallet was stolen, but we have that photo from her wallet of a nun. When was it recovered?
Okay, great question, great catch. So the wallet, I'll say this, the wallet was discovered months after the crime, and it was recovered. I have the photo of the wallet because when I went to the clerk's office to scan it, I actually had to take a VHS a VCR and some equipment to transfer a crime scene video into digital format so that that nobody had seen in 20 years because it's a VHS. And I was going through some of the other evidence that was there, and I pull out this bag and there's the wallet, which really should be in. And of course I was, you know, rubber gloved, didn't pick through it or anything, but I would think it would be stored in an evidence locker somewhere, but it was in the clerk's office, which is probably where it's supposed to be. It just, to me, it seemed like it should be somewhere else. And going through the contents, that's where I found the photo of a nun, which was interesting. There's no other photos in there. There's all kinds of stuff in the wallet. But there's one photo, and it's just this little wallet size photo of a nun that her nephew Juan has no idea who it is.
Got it. Amber asks, was it a quote unquote bad neighborhood? Any reports of burglaries, robberies, drugs, domestic?
I don't know. From talking to the family, it didn't feel like a bad neighborhood to them. To kind of put things into context, there's the Green Arbor apartment complex is pretty big, as I mentioned. And then right across the street is the, I think it's called the Sabo Village Apartments, but it's probably twice the size of Green Arbor. And that's where the little alleyway that ran right in front of Catalina's apartment went right out to the road that crossed over to that other apartment complex. And so as far as the neighborhood goes, what you have all, everybody in that neighborhood lives in an apartment. There are no houses around. So it's all rentals. So kind of, I guess you would say kind of a transient community where people, you know, people don't live always long term in apartments. There's different people coming in and out all the time. As far as the crime rate there, so where I just literally yesterday got some of the police file that I've been waiting for. And as I started to go through those reports, I have come across where the lead detective has put in a search to get records of any similar crimes or burglaries in the area. I have not made it in the hundreds of pages of documents yet to where or if he ever gets a return on that, where they explain. So I don't really know the answer to that other than just anecdotal from the people that lived there at the time. To them, it didn't seem like a bad neighborhood.
I do believe there was a listener comment that said they lived in that area around that time frame, and they said that area was kind of on the edge. They didn't say it was bad, but they didn't say it was necessarily good either.
Could be. To me, when I was there now in 2021, it didn't feel like a bad neighborhood. I mean, of course, in the complex itself now, there's 10-foot wrought iron fence all the way around it with a gate to go through. But just the neighborhood, and I ate lunch right there. When I left there, I went around the corner to some fast food and sat and ate lunch. It didn't feel at all like a bad neighborhood to me now, but who knows from 96.
Right. Okay. Christina asks, who originally brought this case to you? I was curious if it was one of Jennifer's family members.
It was not. So the case was brought to me by, it was submitted through our website by at least two people. One of whom is longtime listener, Kathy McElhaney.
Sure.
I'm sure Kathy's listening right now. Thank you, Kathy, for submitting the case.
Hi, Kathy.
And then also it was submitted by I don't know what you would call Lakidru. I guess I would call her an advocate. But she is somebody that is an advocate for the case and works with the family. I got to meet her when I was in Houston, too. And I believe she had also submitted it. And it may have been, we get so many hundreds of them. It may have been pitched to us by someone else along the way as well. But it just, the way it was formatted or worded or the information was given didn't catch my attention the first time. But it was definitely those two people. And now, of course, we've heard the family on the podcast, and they're working with me too.
Yeah, I'm glad that question got asked, because I was wondering if it was an Innocence Project case, because obviously you've had involvement on with and without the Texas Innocence Project in some of the Texas cases.
Right. We actually had kind of lined up for season 10 another case that was pitched to us from the Innocence Project of Texas, similar to Deb Perringer's, where they were just in the preliminary phases and they wanted us to look at it to make a determination if they should move forward. And as I, the deeper I got, I mean, I got into it, months into it. And then I just came to the conclusion, I don't know what they'll do with it. I didn't come to the conclusion that the person is absolutely guilty, but I came to the conclusion that, it, in my opinion, is most likely guilty. And I just wasn't going to commit any more resources to it at that point.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that in passing on a past episode that you had sort of started going into that and then thought, I don't think this is the one.
Right.
Mike, who I'm going to assume is not our Mike, and yes, I am saying our Mike as if I'm a regular member of the show now. Mike asks, how does the family of the victim feel about Jennifer and about your investigation?
I was actually surprised, number one, that Juan Mendiola was willing to talk to me. I mean, every season, I always reach out to family members of the victims. I always want to hear from them. I want to learn more about the victim. Normally, I get, told to piss off or they just will avoid me. The reason I travel so much and I don't make phone calls is because of the classic, oh, yeah, I'll talk to you. Just let me, I got to get home and I'll call you right back. And then you never hear from them ever again. In Juan's case, you actually heard on the podcast my greeting with him. I always have like a hidden microphone running all day long just to capture moments like that. Because I was wondering if anybody thought it was weird that I was recording and I said, hang on, let me get recording equipment. That's why, because I had a little bitty microphone in my shirt. But part of the interview with him that you haven't heard yet, you'll hear later, we get into his thoughts on Jennifer and her case. And all I can really say is that Juan only knows about Jennifer what the police and prosecution told him about Jennifer. So they told him that she's guilty.
Right.
So he believes that. But at the same time, I'll say this, that he definitely, there's some doubt in his mind, I think. And also he's an extremely kind and compassionate man too. But we'll be hearing more from Juan as the season progresses.
Yeah, he seemed great. I really liked I liked your interview with him a lot. He seemed very thoughtful and he seemed like a neat guy.
Yeah, I could see how Juan could have a little doubt. Just based on looking at it. I mean, it's a pretty heinous act that happened. Mm-hmm. And for a 15-year-old female to commit it, it just doesn't seem like it's totally there.
Well, especially if it went down the way I think it went down based on that preliminary, because my theory, and I stand by it at this point, certainly that may change as I get more and more information. But and I'll tell you this, it's very different. My theory is different than the police theory, even initially, or at least as it was presented at trial. But all the evidence that you could see very, to me, pretty clearly indicates that someone jumped over that fence and immediately attacked her. And that she, if you were on the website and you could see the diagram of the apartment, and she just, she ran from the patio door and tried to get to the front door to escape. And in the 10 seconds it took to catch her there, and they hit her over the head, and that was it. It just doesn't feel like any juvenile offender. Like to me, that is a violent person that has been violent in the past and has no guilt or empathy about committing such acts of violence. It just doesn't fit really with any 15-year-old.
Yeah. Lauren asks, how long did Eva live in that above apartment? Does she have a criminal record? And also, were you able to tape any calls with Jennifer? And will we hear that this season? And I thought we had heard Jennifer. I know we heard Kimberly. But to be honest, right, it's true. In fairness, you didn't necessarily identify to whom you were speaking. We sort of had to infer it from the context, right, of the conversation. So it's a good question.
Yeah. And it was only 17 seconds you heard. And the answer is, we did hear from Jennifer. That was her when we were talking about the running away and how that happened. The second voice you heard, that was Jennifer. And it was just a short little clip of her. I have already recorded quite a bit with her and we will be hearing more from her. However, I want to point out at least right now. So interesting. She's been without a lawyer for years during her post-conviction, wow, process. The case was pitched to me months and months ago. When I finally got to it and decided, I think this is going to be the one, and reached out to her and the family, like literally like a week before that, Jennifer got a new attorney. A new attorney stepped in to help her, who hopefully we'll meet here on the podcast as we move along. I've been working with him, at least been in communication with him. But with the new attorney being on the case, he and I are both in a race to try to get all of our documents, not against each other, but with each other. As a matter of fact, I got my packet from Houston PD that I told you about a minute ago. Well, they hadn't sent his yet, so I got mine and sent it to him. And hopefully if he gets stuff before me, he'll send it to me. But in this kind of interim time right now where, you know, as he put it, that, you know, I don't know everything about the case yet because I don't have all the documents. And so he has advised Jennifer right now to not talk specifically about her case right now. So, and it's kind of thrown a little bit of curveballs in, and especially this episode coming in on, here in 2 days on Sunday, where I really had planned on having Jennifer tell the story. I can't have Jennifer tell the story right now, but yes, you're going to be hearing from her. And the way it sounds to me, once her attorney has a pretty clear picture of everything that's going on and he can advise her better, probably then we'll have Jennifer be able to tell more of her story about the case. As far as the first question goes, Eva, I think, had lived in the apartment for a few years. From what I've seen so far through some of the documents that are filtering in slowly, is that was her mother's apartment. And then when her mother moved out, she stayed there. And as far as criminal record, I ran a criminal back then. She had a record, and she had one offense. And when I ran current criminal background checks on her, it looks like she still only has one offense, and it's a nonviolent offense. There's really no, I didn't want to get into what it was, but it had nothing violent, nothing relevant to what's going on with this case.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Dawn asks, where can I see pictures and stuff?
Yeah, as I was just saying, everything's on our website. So anytime you hear me referencing documents, photos, any of that, the website is truthandjusticepod.com. And if you go to cases and documents, you can go to the Catalina Palomino season, and all that stuff will be. It just takes you to a Google Drive, and there's a folder for every episode, and everything will be found right there.
Great. Rhiannon wants to know, what are your current feelings on this being a wrongful conviction? Are you still in open-minded investigation mode, or have you seen enough to feel she's definitely innocent? Great question, Rhiannon.
Definitely still open-minded. Where I'm at right now is, I will say this, I don't know, and I can say, and this is not just me, you know, BSing, like trying to pretend to be unbiased, I really don't know if she's not guilty. I know that this crime did not go down the way the prosecution presented it as going down. I know that the methods used to build the case were very dishonest and very likely led to a lot of misinformation building the case. I'm trying to dance around what we got coming up, but it just... When I look at the prosecution's case and I take the elements that I know are bullshit and I pull them away, there's no case left. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jennifer is innocent or that she's guilty, but I feel very strongly that she very likely is innocent. And I absolutely know that the way this case was handled was completely improper and not fair, especially for a 15-year-old.
Okay, that takes us to... Leanne wants to know, if Eva and the two men heard someone screaming and immediately went to see what was going on, why did they not see the perpetrator or perpetrators fleeing the scene?
That is the best question that anyone has asked, and it is one of the questions that I had that led to me taking this case.
Oh.
We have a situation where, from what you guys know right now, we have multiple witnesses, right? We've got Eva, youngster, Katie, and Jennifer. And there's different stories that are being told to the police, as you'll hear about more this weekend, but none of them make sense. And that's the biggest one, you know. So what it ends up being is you end up with three against one against Jennifer, is what's going to be happening in a sense as we move forward here. You know, these three witnesses all say one thing happened, Jennifer says something else happened, Jennifer must be guilty. But the problem is those three people are all telling the same story, and the story doesn't make sense. So just to put that into context, what they're saying is you have Eva, Katie, youngster, the three guys come out of the apartment. down the stairs, which again, if you go to the website, you can see these photos. And I actually took a picture of that view of they would see from the stairs down into the patio. It's right there. They hear the screaming. They holler. She hollers back, or the fake voice comes back. And then Eva takes off and goes to get help. And then Eva says she comes back. Katie and Youngster are still there. And now at this point, Jennifer's there. And so they're outside this whole time. And then the maintenance man goes and jumps inside and checks on her and finds her inside dead. So the story is these two guys were standing outside the patio where there's no possible way for anybody to get out of that unit without going past them. While the murder was occurring, remained there until someone came and found the body inside, never moved, but didn't see who left the apartment. They didn't see anybody fleeing the scene. There's no way that makes sense in any way, shape, or form. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I said, I don't know what happened, but I know that's not what happened.
You know, Eva's statement where she said that she heard a male pretending to be a female saying, oh, I'm okay, I just fell and hit my head, really was strange to me. I mean, it just didn't
It didn't it sounds like it something from a movie or something.
Yeah,
like,
it really does. Yeah. I mean, it's right. It's really silly almost. Like, especially if there's this, if it's a loud enough bang and screaming to bring you out of your apartment to see what's happening, you're just going to say, okay, she fell down.
It. I can't get into too much of it, but it like, all these pieces of, it's like someone made a bullshit pie. If that's my new hashtag is bullshit pie, because all these pieces and elements of BS that everyone is saying get plopped in together to make up the prosecution's theory. And then of course the theory doesn't make sense because it was made of bullshit. It's bullshit pie, hashtag bullshit pie.
Interesting.
It's number one, I'm never eating any kind of pie again. That's it for me. I'm out on pie. I love that it's a pie. It could have been any number of other things. Could have been cookies. Could have been stew. For whatever reason, it's a bullshit pie. I gotcha.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Mary asks, were Eva and Jennifer paged by the same person? Who pages a dancer or a teenager at 7:40 in the morning? Mary feels it can't be a coincidence.
Good. It was not the same person. I don't know at this point. Hopefully I'll find out more as I'm getting more documents in. Who paged Eva? The 7:40 a.m. page seems strange. But keep in mind, too, she's a mom. And she didn't have her kid with her. So it could have been dad paging her. I have no idea.
Yeah, that one didn't seem that weird to me. Maybe it's because like I'm a weird lady who gets up super early. But 7:40 didn't seem that early to me.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It could be, too, no offense to Mary that wrote this, but I think some people may have like an image in their mind of they hear that she's a dancer and maybe category, oh, well, that's just a stripper. Why would a stripper be up early in the morning or whatever? But I mean, that's just her job. That's just what she does to pay her bills. But no, the page to Jennifer was and we talk a little bit more about it this week, but it was a family friend. she had run away, and it was a family friend of the mom's that was looking for her on behalf of mom to try to help track her down.
I feel like pagers, this is, I'm sure, never going to make it in, but for anybody who's watching in the follow-up on Patreon, I feel like pagers, it's such a weird time in technology. There's something that's almost worse about a pager than either you've got your messages at home, you can call and check them, or we have cell phones and you have the information with you at the snap of a finger. But the pager in between of like, you get a page, who is it? What could it mean? When am I going to have time to return the page? Where am I going to, you know, when can I find a phone to call that person? That feels like a really stressful era in technology and communication to me. Am I crazy?
No, that was a totally stressful time. I had a pager about that time.
What were you, six?
No, I was older than that. But
I did not have a pager, and I was definitely older than you.
Well, maybe it was a little after this, but I had a pager at one point, and I had the rule that if my mom paged me, I had 5 minutes to call her back. Uh-huh. And that is the most stressful 5 minutes of your life when you're trying to find a phone to call your mom.
Right, and you're trying to get out of where it is you're not supposed to be that, yes, you are 100%. Right then. You never had a pager, Janet?
No, I never had a pager. I didn't have anything important enough going on in my life that anybody needed to be able to reach me.
No
right
one
away.
Did. None of us did. I did. I did have a pager in 96, and that was part of that whole like setting the scene, the time. But yeah, I had one. I don't remember why I had it. Remember, everybody would have them, and they would clip them in their, and instead of their belt, they would put them in their pocket with like the clip on the outside.
Yep.
Surely, you at least knew people wearing their
definitely
pagers around
did.
Like that.
Definitely did.
Yeah. And there's maybe people that have never had one or don't remember how it worked, but yeah, so the way it would work is you would call, you know, whatever my pager number was, you'd call that phone number and it would go to like a service and it would say, boop, leave your phone number, your callback number after the tone, you'd punch in your callback number and hit pound and then hang up. And then it would send to me, I'd get a page and all it would be that phone number. And then I'd go have to find a phone and call it. So yeah, different time, and it was like a blip in history too. It seemed like yeah. Pagers came in for like a year, and then like they got taken over by cell phones, and they never came back.
You're right. It was like a stopgap. Like we figured out how to do just this. Oh wait, no, we figured out everything else. Just no,
right.
You don't need that anymore.
Exactly how it was. So you didn't get to experience any of the, because then we got clever with it. And we started figuring out how to send like messages through the pager. You know, like if you put. What was it like
8001? You were telling someone boob.
Yeah, that's the one. That's
that is an important message. Thank God you figured
out
how to communicate.
Are you gonna put 911 at the end for an emergency?
Yeah, 911 meant emergency call now.
Yeah.
Except everyone just did that, right? I mean, young people were like, "No, I want to call back right now, 911." And it was like, yeah. "What are you eating later?"
Such a weird, weird time. But yeah, so back to the question. Yeah, that was a family friend looking for Jennifer, kind of on the behalf of mom, because what we'll learn is mom didn't have a phone in her apartment either. So Eva didn't have a phone, mom didn't have a phone, but Jennifer had this pager. So this person reached out to her on the pager to try to track her down.
Gotcha. Lynn asks, do you think the victim was outside or inside her unit when first threatened? Seems she could have been the person that knocked the screen door off its track. Oh, that's interesting.
It's a really good question. And as a matter of fact, this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier, where I've seen in the initial reports by police that their theory is that that Catalina was inside of her apartment and then saw somebody come over the patio, and that they broke into the patio door and then cornered her by her, which in my mind, especially if you look at the crime scene photos, is preposterous that that's what happened, namely because her slipper is on the patio and the other slipper is inside. So it seems pretty obvious that she came out of her slippers as she was running away. Good question. As far as the screen, could it have been Catalina that broke the screen? It could be if it was broken in, but it was broken out.
Oh, okay.
At least in my mind, as I'm picturing what that person was asking, I'm imagining her kind of doing something I've done drunk at parties on multiple occasions, which is running into a closed screen door. Where it would break in because she's just fleeing in a panic. But no, it was ripped out. And I think part of the police conclusion that she was inside was that there were signs of damage on the latch of the screen door. So I think they thought the people broke in through the screen. But I think it's possible that, number one, that damage is already there. We've all had those, you know, cheap screen doors and know how what fantastic security the locks are on those things. But also, I think it's possible. I think probably what happened is she's on the patio. They're jumping over. She flees in, grabs the tries to close the screen behind her. And there's a struggle there, and it just gets grabbed and ripped off, is what I think happened based on what I know now.
I could very well see that, but I could also see it happening with her grabbing it. She's trying to just close it behind her.
Right.
And pulls it backwards, but the same process is happening, is what you explained.
Wait, you're saying she would close it behind her? She would try to close the screen door behind her
as a defensive move? You're running away from somebody, and you're grabbing it, pulling it back, which would rip it off backwards.
Gotcha.
Open.
I have a quick question. We're getting towards the end, but this is probably something you can't answer. But in hearing the description of Catalina and, you know, Juan talking about her, I mean, this is literally a woman who we have been told has only the best intentions for others, has a photograph of a nun in her wallet. Is this a situation where it's a defenseless, sweet, wonderful older woman who people want justice immediately, and there's a sense of, you know, well, the police have to, they care about this more. Of course, they should care about everything equally. But because of who the victim is, do you think that there is a feeling of pressure to pin someone right away?
I honestly don't think that's it. Especially because I think that this particular police department at that particular time, I think was pretty racially insensitive. And the fact that, and that's just my own opinion on it, but that the fact that she was a Hispanic woman certainly wouldn't have, and she didn't have a bunch of family beating down their doors. You know, there's nothing that would make it rise up to be a more important case. I think it has more to do with some of that racial insensitivity, how it got closed. And then also the fact that they had such a high crime rate and so many homicides to clear that it's almost like Baltimore, where they're just clear the case. And what you'll see is this is our story moves along is they literally was like they found the first person that they thought maybe could have done it, and then whether intentionally or intentionally just found, well, this was an easy person to put this on, and they put it on them, and you'll see. I mean, that there's a horrible set of circumstances at the end of this besides what happened to Jennifer Jeffley, but as far as the justice for Catalina Palomino, you'll see very clearly that no, they didn't want justice for her because they never got it. Even if Jennifer's guilty in the way they say she is, Catalina still never got justice.
Okay, what that tells me is that this season we can look forward to some classic Bob Ruff, rageful, righteous indignation, which I enjoy very much, and I get a real thrill out of because I feel that rage. I'm angry right now just based on only what you just said about the police. I'm already very angry. So this is going to be a good season for how dare they. I can feel it coming.
Oh, yeah. It's funny you said that because I just recorded this week's main episode and found myself getting enraged as I was, you know, reading it and recording it. And in that moment, I thought, God, I almost missed, like I haven't, because of what we've been doing for season 9, which I've loved, and we've taken a true crime binge, but I've gotten out of this like real work helping real people. And there was definitely that rage is already building in me. And as much as I don't like to feel rage, the fact that I was feeling a strong emotion about what we were doing, like there was definitely this weird feeling of, I'm back.
Chelsea asks, how the hell would Jennifer get accused of this if she is standing at the scene of the crime when people come for help? She would have to be covered in blood and possibly even scratch marks.
Well, that is, I think, the perfect question to end on because I do have an answer for you, but the answer is going to come on Sunday. So in Sunday's episode, we're going to learn how Jennifer became a suspect and what led to her arrest. All that's coming in episode 2, Sunday morning. That felt like the end of the
and
show.
What happened?
It did.
I know. It's over.
But I have a very important, listen, I have a very important, and this comes from my heart, not just where it's written right here, from my heart. What if that's not enough, Bob Ruff, for me, Bob? Okay. Is there something else I can listen to? Like True Crime Binge? Like, who would be on that show this week, if I ask, which I'm asking, because I want to know.
You know, Janet, I'm glad you asked. So for this week's episode of True Crime Binge, which has dropped 2 days ago, we had the amazing and talented Christine Schieffer, who is one of the hosts of the And That's Why We Drink podcast. We talk about a really cool case. It's kind of a triumphant story of Miriam Rodriguez, who her daughter was kidnapped and murdered by a drug cartel. And when she thought the police weren't doing enough, she took matters into her own hands and managed to capture 10 members of a drug cartel. Really cool story. Again, triumphant and tragic all at the same time. And if you're looking for something between this coming Sunday's episode and next week's follow-up, next week, Nick from True Crime Garage is going to be on True Crime Binge, and we are digging even deeper into the Delphi murders.
Oh, man. Listen, when you say that that case obsesses you and that it haunts you, I guarantee you most of your listeners are nodding in agreement, because that one is really tough. And I totally understand why people have reached out to you and said, you know, can you put your spin on this? Can you do anything about it? It is really just, I'm so excited to hear more from you and Nick about it.
Well, thank you so much again, Janet, for joining us and for giving me the opportunity for the shameless plug for True Crime Binge, which I hope you all go listen to, download, rate, and review. Zach, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, buddy.
And Janet, thank you again so much for playing Mike this week. You did a fantastic job. And we'd love to have you back any other time one of these two knuckleheads aren't here.
I'm happy to do it. And I know that I could never fill Mike's shoes, but I'm glad to lend a hand and be a part of this as a super fan.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in, and make sure you tune in to episode 2 this Sunday. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by Zach Weaver, and all of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, Erica Cantor, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd really like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, Truth and Justice Pod. Just click the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in the investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth. Mike can be found @MurbGaming, MURRBGAMING, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine-washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.